The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Falcon, Mrs. Custer told me something that I'd never heard before. She told me that you were with her husband when he was killed.
I wasn't with him at the exact time he was killed. I was with Bentine and Reno when the general was killed.
Why haven't I heard this about you before?
Because my being there was an accident of sorts. A lot of good men gave their last full measure of devotion on that day. I never felt it was right to detract from their honor by interjecting myself.
I wonder, Falcon, would you share the story with me now?
It's been over 50 years, and I've never told this story to anyone before. I'm not sure I can do it justice. Well, I warn you, it's a long story.
I'm a novelist, Falcon. I deal in long stories. Please, go ahead.
Well now, the year 1876 was what historians would call an eventful year. In Philadelphia, they celebrated our country's centennial. Colorado became a state. They invented the telephone. And at a lonely place in Montana, General Custer and 265 brave men were killed.
Colonel McAllister, this way! Damn! You're one hell of an engine fighter, Falcon. I've been at this game for a long time. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
I'll be damned.
What is it?
The Colorado Home Guard is missing 100 rifles. It looks like we just found a few of them.
You mean in addition to the Gatling guns we're looking for, there's also a bunch of repeating rifles out there?
Sweet fancy Moses, look at that!
Have you ever seen that many Indians at one time?
No, sir, I have not. Two Bears was right. These engines is coming from everywhere.
We have to tell Custer about this. I don't think he has any idea what he's letting himself in for.
You don't really know the General all that well, do you?
I haven't known him very long. Why do you ask?
Because it ain't gonna make no never mind what we tell him. He has his mind made up to go after the engines, and that's exactly what he's gonna do.
We've got them this time! We've got them, boys! Trumpeter Martin!
Don't miss the saga of Falcon McAllister at the Little Bighorn and Eagles 14, Bloodshed of Eagles. Available now in graphic audio.
Two isolated groups of surviving Russians attempt to join forces to overcome John Rourke and his German allies in a race to gain access to a nuclear arsenal in China.
If whoever has taken over the leadership of Karamazov's army should find the remainder of the Chinese nuclear arsenal or effect some sort of treaty with the Soviet forces based in the Pacific and thereby obtain nuclear weapons, it is unthinkable.
The unthinkable became reality 5 centuries before. It doesn't mean undoable anymore, Captain.
Natalia and the Rourke family face assassination squads in China and an attack on their stronghold in Georgia.
There is no need for your men to die. They can walk out of here alive and unmolested. If you order them to withdraw before they take the lives of my family, you can join them or stay and fight me, whatever you wish.
We all came, Dr. Rourke, knowing we would never leave.
What the hell are they doing?
Assaulting the retreat, it appears.
Why? And who are they?
They must be planning to plant explosive charges where they think the main entrance is.
Could conventional explosives do anything?
No location is completely insusceptible to explosive damage if the job is done correctly.
Weil! Etwas ist hier falsch!
They're German, Paul.
German? But...
we'll discuss it later.
Horst!
Get down!
Eden Base members Halverson and Kuranami must find safe harbor with Wolfgang Mann's forces or face murder charges from Commander Dodd.
Colonel Mann, how dare you hold this man and his female accomplice in total defiance of my request? Kuranami is subject to the military discipline of Eden Base Command. He is mine, and so is his accomplice, Dr. Halverson.
It would appear that none of the Eden personnel are unaccounted for, yet you insist that the lieutenant has murdered someone. Who might these dead be? German nationals who are enemies of the state? Criminals with whom you, perhaps, sympathize?
I don't have to take your insults, Colonel.
Nor do I have to return Lieutenant Korinami and his fiancée, the Fräulein Doctor.
Where the rocks narrow up ahead, it's a good spot for an ambush. The tire! Get out of there! We're clear! Get out of there!
John!
The tire!
John!
Natalia! Natalia! Damn
it! John!
Hold on, sweetheart.
A haunting past, a harrowing future, and betrayal from within all challenge John Rourke's skills in Survivalist number 16, The Arsenal, in Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by James Konacek, Mort Shelby, Thomas Penny, Christopher Grayville, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, MJ Casey, Terrence Aislefford, Jeff Baker, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Dylan Lynch, Johan Detweiler, Nanette Savard, Scott McCormick, Lily Beacon, Tim Carlin, and Eric Messner. The Last Gunfighter, number 15, Avenger.
Once, for a brief moment in time, the town had been a boom town, a trail drive town. The railhead, where thousands upon thousands of cattle had been loaded onto trains to begin their long journey to the slaughterhouses of Chicago. But then the railhead had moved on farther west, taking the hell on wheels with it. And in the 20-some-odd years since then, the town had settled down into a sleepy little farming community where nothing much ever happened. On this Tuesday morning, that was all about to change.
You think the train will be on time, Rance?
You think you can say my name any louder? I'm not sure everyone in the place heard it.
Oh, sorry, Rance. Sorry.
Yes, it will be on time.
Six men had ridden in about 8 o'clock. The eastbound train was due at 9. They had quietly consumed flapjacks, scrambled eggs, bacon, and coffee as they sat at a table. Nobody paid much attention to them. At first glance, they were ordinary-looking men. That was because their coats covered the butts of their six guns. Those guns gleamed with care, and the walnut grips were well-worn from long use.
It's 9:05. Let's get this thing started.
The purposeful way in which they moved toward the door of the hash house was the first hint that something might be wrong. The strangers were brisk and businesslike now.
I'll be dang, it's early. Now we can have some fun.
Keep your wits about you, kid. This is no game.
The men crossed the dusty street to their horses and shucked Winchester repeaters from saddle boots. Then they walked around the red brick depot building to the platform instead of going through the lobby. A few townspeople stood on the platform, waiting to either board the train or meet somebody who was getting off. Some of them glanced curiously at the strangers. A couple of older men, who had been to see the elephant a time or two in their lives, looked with narrowed eyes at the strangers and then turned to walk quickly into the depot as if they were getting out of the way of something. The train was in sight now, chugging steadily toward the station from the west, black smoke rising from the diamond-shaped stack of the Big Baldwin locomotive. The man who had checked his watch stepped to the edge of the platform, leaned out slightly to peer along the tracks, and then nodded in satisfaction.
Let's get in position.
Right, boss.
Inside the station, one of the old-timers was talking quickly and earnestly to the station master. The station master frowned dubiously at first, but after a minute he nodded and gestured to one of the boys who worked at the depot. He gave some quick instructions to the boy, who then hurried across the lobby, banged through the doors, and took off at a run down the street in the direction of the marshal's office. He wasn't going to get there in time. The train was already pulling into the station. Frank Morgan's long legs were stretched out in front of him, and his hat was tipped down over his eyes. He never slept very well on a train. So earlier that morning, after he'd gotten some coffee and a bite to eat in the dining car, he'd returned to his seat for a nap. He didn't fall completely asleep, but he rested a little while, remaining alert. That habitual caution was ingrained so deeply within him that it would always be a part of him, he supposed. The train was somewhere in Kansas, that was all he knew for sure. Frank thumbed his hat back on thick, dark hair streaked liberally with gray. He wore a faded blue work shirt with the sleeves rolled up a little on his muscular forearms. The legs of his denim trousers hung outside the tops of well-worn horseman's boots. He didn't appear to be a wealthy man, but he was. One of the richest hombres west of the Mississippi, in fact, with business interests scattered from the Rio Grande to the Canadian border. Frank Morgan didn't pay much attention to those business interests. He had a whole passel of lawyers and accountants in Denver and San Francisco to do that. He watched them just closely enough to know that nobody was trying to cheat him. No, judging by appearances, Frank Morgan was little more than a saddle tramp, a drifter. But the Colt Peacemaker on his hip told a different story. He wasn't just a drifter. He was the drifter, a fast gun whose fame had spread across the frontier for years. A gunfighter in an era when civilization was on the ascent and men such as Frank Morgan mostly had been bypassed by time. Not completely, though. Frank wasn't obsolete just yet.
Good morning, Mr. Morgan.
The conductor knew who he was and approached him with obviously mixed emotions. On the one hand, Frank could have sat on the board of directors of this railroad if he had chosen to do so, which meant the conductor had to treat him with some deference. On the other hand, Frank was a known killer who had gunned down countless men, and that made him an abomination to the conductor's civilized nature.
I hope everything has been to your liking, Mr. Morgan.
Just fine. We gonna be stopped here long?
No, sir. Just long enough to take on any passengers and freight we've got waiting for us.
Long enough for me to get out and stretch my legs a little, though. I'm mighty stiff after last night.
We would have been happy to find a sleeping berth for you, Mr. Morgan.
You mean you would have kicked somebody out of a berth they had reserved? No thanks. I'll sit up all the way to Chicago before I'll do that.
Oh, well, in answer to your question, we'll be stopped here for at least 5 minutes if you want to walk around a little.
Thanks.
As the conductor moved on, Frank glanced through the windows by the seats on the other side of the aisle. That was the side the station platform was on. He saw six men standing there with rifles in their hands. As Frank watched, the group split up, three going toward the front of the car, three toward the rear.
Oh, hell.
Frank's brain was already racing as he decided on his course of action. The vestibule at the rear of the car was closer, so Frank turned in that direction. He wanted to get out of the railroad car as quick as possible, out where he would have more room to move, and where not as many innocents would be endangered by the lead that was about to fly. When Frank reached the vestibule, he stepped through it and out onto the car's rear platform. His hand was already reaching for the peacemaker on his hip as he turned toward the station platform. The three rifle toters got there at the same time. Their eyes widened as they looked up at him and saw that he was ready for them.
Rance! He's back here!
Frank fired instantly, putting a bullet in the chest of one of the would-be killers. Frank turned slightly and fired again. His second bullet shattered a man's shoulder and sent him spinning off his feet. The third man managed to fire the rifle in his hands, but he rushed the shot, and the bullet spanked off the brass fitting at the corner of the railroad car. The last of the gunmen who had come in this direction doubled over as the slug tore agonizingly into his belly. Frank spun around and leaped off the other side of the train. He landed agilely and dropped into a crouch. There was open ground on this side of the train and no place to hunt some cover.
Billy, you all right?
Over here, Rance! The bastard Arnold shot my arm off!
Frank ran toward the front of the car, bending low. As he ran, he glanced underneath the car, hoping to spot the legs of the other three men who wanted to kill him. All he could see, though, was the raised station platform. He had nearly reached the front of the car when two of the assassins bounded across the platform at the back of it and began firing at him. Morgan whirled toward them and went to one knee, squeezing off a couple of shots as he crouched. One of the riflemen lurched, blood spurting from the side of his neck. The other man was hit in the body and somehow managed to stay on his feet and keep firing, but his aim was none too accurate.
Damn.
Frank's problem now was that the gun in his hand was empty. Under normal circumstances, like riding on a train, he carried it with the hammer resting on an empty chamber, and he had expended all five rounds that the cylinder held. There were fresh cartridges in the loops on his belt, but he would need a few seconds to reload, preferably when slugs weren't coming so close to him. He threw himself to the side, rolled over the rail and under the train. The rough gravel of the roadbed poked at him through his shirt. Frank opened the revolver's cylinder, dumped the empties, and reached behind him to pluck live rounds from the loops of the shell belt.
The bastard's under the train, Rance!
We'll find him, dammit!
Frank looked over and saw the booted feet of the man who was searching for him. The gunman was moving slowly and carefully toward the front of the car. Frank could have broken his ankle with a shot, but instead he planned to wait until the assassin had gone on by, then roll out behind him. That plan fell apart before it had a chance to develop. The train began to move, rolling slowly eastward. Frank's cover was leaving. The leader of the killers, the man called Rance, must have run up to the engine and climbed into the locomotive's cab. A gun at the engineer's head would force him to move the train. Frank jammed his gun back in its holster and rolled onto his back. He probably had time to slip out from under the car before the train started moving too fast. But instead, he reached up and grabbed hold of the undercarriage. He lifted his feet and twisted his ankles around a pipe. As he pulled himself up, he came clear of the roadbed. The train carried him along as he hung on tightly. He clung there like a burr until he judged that the caboose was clear of the station. Then he dropped off, timing his moves so that he would fall between cross ties and ignoring the pain that shot through him as his back jolted heavily against the roadbed. The rest of the train passed over him, and when its shade was gone, the morning sunlight jabbed abruptly against Frank's eyes. He squinted and rolled onto his belly again, drawing his gun as he did so.
Where the hell is he?
Hey, you're looking in the wrong place.
The man whirled toward him, raising his Colt with his remaining good arm. But before he even started to line up a shot. Oh. Oh. With that threat disposed of, Frank turned toward the train. He saw immediately that he'd been a little too slow. Rance had already climbed down from the cab of the locomotive, bringing the engineer with him. He had his left arm looped tightly around the man's neck, and his right hand held a pistol with the muzzle pressed hard against the engineer's head.
Drop your gun, Morgan. Drop it or I swear I'll blow this poor bastard's brains out.
Please, mister.
No, I can't do that, Rance.
You know me?
Sure. I know if I drop my gun, you'll ventilate me a second later, so I can't do it.
Rance pressed harder on the engineer's temple with the gun barrel.
I'll kill him!
That's too damn bad, isn't it? Maybe what you should do is drop your gun. Your boys are lying back there at the station, either dead or shot up so bad they're out of this fight. And I'll wager that local law is on its way. But you haven't done anything today that's a hanging offense. You haven't killed anybody. So unless you're wanted for something else, you can surrender and live through this, Rance.
The hell with that! I took the money to do a job and I aim to do it!
Took money from who?
Frank had a pretty good idea of what the answer was, but some confirmation of his hunch would be nice.
Go to hell, gunfighter!
I hope you enjoyed spending Dutton's money.
The slight widening of Rance's eyes told Frank that he'd been right about who hired the killers. Then, Rance jerked his gun toward Frank. Rance's shot went wild because Frank's bullet had already sizzled past the engineer's ear and struck Rance in the right eye just as the gunman pulled the trigger. He stood there for a second with his arm still around the engineer's neck before the rest of his body caught up with the fact that he was dead. Then he let go, slid down to his knees, and toppled onto his side. The engineer fell in the other direction, passing out from fear and strain and the sudden relief of realizing that he was still alive.
Drop it! Drop that gun, mister! I got a scattergun pointed right at you.
Are you the law?
That's right. I'm the town marshal here, and I got a shotgun and two deputies that are armed, too. You gonna put that gun down, or do we have to shoot?
Take it easy, Marshal.
Frank bent forward and carefully placed the Colt on the roadbed. Then he straightened and lifted both hands to shoulder level.
I'm turning around now.
Do it slow and careful-like, and don't try nothing funny.
Frank saw that the marshal was flanked by a couple of much younger and more nervous deputies. They worried Frank more than the marshal did. The local badge had the look of an experienced man who wouldn't panic and start shooting unless he had good reason.
It's all over, Marshal. Why don't you tell your deputies to lower those greeners? I'd hate for one of them to go off accidentally.
Won't be nothing accidental about it if you try anything.
I'm not going to. All I did was defend myself. Those men met the train with the sole intention of killing me. They're hired guns.
Who the hell are you that somebody would send six bushwhackers after you?
My name is Frank Morgan.
That meant something to all three of the Star Packers. The eyes of the younger men got even wider.
Hell! He's the Drifter! He's in some of those yellowbacks I read!
Not for the first time, he thought, there ought to be a law against pasty-faced scribblers making up a bunch of rubbish about real people and publishing it in dime novels.
The Drifter, eh? Lower those scatter guns, boys. Unless he's got another gun hid somewhere on him, he's unarmed. And I ain't never heard nothing about Frank Morgan carrying a hideout.
The lawman tucked his own greener under his arm.
Now, what's this all about, Morgan?
I'd be glad to come down to your office and tell you all about it, Marshal. But only if you can convince the conductor to hold the train for me. I don't want to have to wait until the next eastbound comes through to be on my way.
I'll see what I can do. But don't forget, you ain't the one giving the orders here.
The marshal turned his head and snapped at one of the deputies.
Go check on them fellows who got shot. Some of them might still be alive. Josh, you go fetch the doc.
Right away, Marshal.
Did Endicott get hit?
Who?
Cleve Endicott, the engineer.
Oh, no, I don't think he's hurt. Looked to me like he just fainted.
For the first time, a hint of amusement appeared on the lawman's rugged face.
Swooned like a gal, eh? You'll get some ribbon about that. I might have done the same thing, though. I saw that shot you made just as I was getting here. That bullet couldn't have missed him by much more than an inch.
That was enough.
Yeah. Come on, Morgan. Let's go talk to the conductor.
The conductor didn't like holding the train, but he agreed to for half an hour. The engineer had to be brought around anyway, and given a little while to recover from his fainting spell. The marshal, whose name was Harry Larch, had walked down to his office with Frank.
Sit down, Morgan.
Am I under arrest?
Not yet. I just want some answers, is all. There hasn't been any real trouble here in my town for a long time, and I want to know why folks started dying this morning all of a sudden.
The marshal's office was in a small, blocky building that also served as the town jail. A coffee pot sat on a cast-iron stove in the corner.
Gonna get me some coffee, Morgan. Care to join me?
Thanks, Marshal. I could use a good cup.
You're jumping the gun there, Mr. Drifter. I never said it would be a good cup.
Well, I'll take what you got anyway, Marshal.
I used to do some cowboying, and that's where I learned to boil coffee, so this is pretty potent.
Just the way I like it.
Yeah. Now, tell me why somebody wants you dead, Morgan, other than the fact that a man like you must have had a lot of enemies to start with.
Those gunmen were sent to intercept me by a man in Boston named Charles Dutton.
Why would this fella Dutton do that?
Because he knows I'm on my way to Boston to kill him.
Simple as that, huh?
Simple as that.
But it wasn't simple, not really, not at all. And the beginnings of it went back years, maybe even decades, depending on how you looked at it.
I don't think killing a man is ever that simple, Morgan.
Of course, you're right about that, Marshal. But it's a pretty long story.
Well, we've got the time. They're still trying to wake up your sleeping train engineer. We got plenty of really strong coffee. And I haven't heard a good story in a long time.
And I'm not getting out of here until you heard it, right?
It doesn't seem likely.
Frank started relating the story. Surprisingly, once he started speaking, it came quickly and easily. It went all the way back to when he had met and fallen in love with, and ultimately married, a beautiful young woman named Vivian. Her father had been opposed to the marriage, and eventually had succeeded in having it set aside legally. But he couldn't do anything about the child Vivian had been carrying when she and Frank parted, and even though Vivian had wound up marrying somebody else who had raised her son Conrad as his own, the boy was Frank's, and that connection would always exist between them. Years later, they had met again. Vivian Browning was a widow by this time, and a very rich widow to boot. It was then that Frank had learned for the first time he had a son. Conrad Browning's dislike for Frank had made his reunion with Vivian a bittersweet one, but given enough time, things might have improved all around.
And you never got the chance?
No. Vivian had been betrayed and set up by one of her attorneys, a man named Charles Dutton. Because of Dutton's actions, Vivian was killed by an outlaw's bullet. That drove a wedge between me and Conrad that almost became permanent.
You said almost?
Circumstances have thrown us together on several occasions. Vivian left most of her business to Conrad and some to me. So we've been partners, whether Conrad wanted it or not. I think we made some headway, though. At least I hope we have.
So have you ever met this Dutton?
Briefly, before Vivian's death. I knew he was responsible for what happened, even though he didn't pull the trigger himself. I always intended to go after him and settle the score, but other things got in the way.
So, what's changed now?
Well, a while ago, I was down Arizona way. Hired killer forced a showdown. As you can see, he lost.
Well, I am a trained lawman, Morgan.
As the gunman lay dying, he revealed that Charles Dutton had hired him to kill me. Clearly, Dutton feels that my very existence poses too much of a continuing threat, and he's decided to have me eliminated.
And that reminded you that you had unfinished business?
And this time, nothing's going to stop me. I suspect Dutton has spies keeping an eye on me. I rode from Arizona up to Denver, talked to my lawyers there, made arrangements for my horse and my dog to be taken care of while I was gone, bought a train ticket to Boston. I see now, that was a mistake, though.
How come?
Because if Dutton knows that I'm coming for him, and I'm sure he does, he'll do his damnedest to try to stop me. He'll try to have me killed before I can get anywhere close to him. He's got the money to hire plenty of gunmen, too. Money he stole from my late wife.
What's that got to do with you riding the train?
I'm an easy target on the train. There's no room to move, and there are too many innocent people around. Not only that, but the men who are after me will always know where to find me.
So what will you do?
What I got to do now is throw them off the trail. My best chance of getting to Dutton.
Even if you make it to Boston, it won't be easy getting to Dutton. He'll probably have himself a bunch of bodyguards.
Yeah, I expect so.
So you're willing to fight your way through a whole army of hired guns and guards just to take your shot at this hombre?
That's about the size of it.
There's one thing you're forgetting, Morgan. No matter how justified you may feel in seeking revenge, what you're really talking about is murder. This is a civilized country now. You can't just walk up to a man and gun him down, no matter what he's done. If you can prove that Dutton is responsible for your wife's death, you need to go to the law. Let them handle it.
I wouldn't expect you to tell me any different, Marshal. And what you say would be mighty good advice for most people. But I'm in the habit of stomping my own snakes, and I reckon I'm too old to change now.
Well, here's your gun back. Looks like you'll be needing it.
Thanks, Marshal.
All I can say is that I'm damn sure glad this fella Dutton is in Boston, not here in my town. This is going to be some other lawman's worry.
Only one of the hired killers had survived the shootout at the train station. Frank and Marshall Larch stopped in at the doctor's office to see the man on their way back to the depot. The wounded man was propped up in bed with bandages wrapped around his shoulder. One of Larch's deputies sat in a straight chair next to the wall, a shotgun lying across his knees. The gunman was pale from pain and loss of blood. He had a thin, beard-stubbled face and watery eyes. He didn't look at Frank and the marshal as they came into the room.
In case you ain't figured it out yet, you're under arrest for attempted murder.
I didn't try to murder nobody. He's the fella you ought to be arresting. He gunned down my friends for no good reason.
Other than the fact that you were shooting at him.
He shot first.
As a matter of fact, that's true. I saw them through the window and recognized them for what they were. They split up, half of them heading for the front of the car and the other three for the back. I met this man and two others at the back of the car. They pointed their rifles at me, and one of them yelled at the leader that I was back there. I figured that was justification enough.
That fits with the story we got from the witnesses, Marshal.
I never said you weren't justified in what you did, Morgan. I wish you'd picked some other town to shoot up, though.
Marshal,
I know. It wasn't really your choice, was it?
Morgan's a killer! He's killed hundreds of men, from what I've heard. He's the one who ought to be behind bars.
I never killed anybody who didn't have it coming. And I'd challenge anybody to prove otherwise.
Never mind about that. All I'm concerned with is what happened here, and I'm satisfied you acted in self-defense. I'll testify to as much at the inquest, which is the only reason I'm willing to let you catch that train and leave town.
He turned his attention back to the gunman.
Now, who hired you and those other boys to kill Morgan?
Nobody hired us. I don't know what you're talking about.
Was it a man named Dutton?
Frank was watching the man's eyes closely, and he saw no sign of recognition in them. The gunman had never heard of Charles Dutton. Well, that didn't really come as a surprise. Rance had been the leader of the bunch, and it was entirely possible he was the only one who had known who they were working for.
This is all crazy. Morgan started shooting at us for no reason.
Oh, you just stick to that story, son. We'll see whether or not a jury believes it, and then you'll have a nice long time to think about it in prison.
The would-be killer didn't know anything that could be used legally against Dutton. It was lucky for Dutton that Rance had been killed in the shooting.
Stay here and keep an eye on him for now, Josh. As soon as the doc says it's all right, we'll move him down to the jail. He can recuperate there while he's waiting to stand trial.
Will do, Marshal.
With that, Frank and the marshal left the doctor's office and walked on to the railroad station. The station master, the conductor, the engineer, and the brakeman were conferring on the platform.
Are we about ready to roll again? The head office ain't going to be happy about us falling this far behind schedule.
The station master wired on ahead to the next stop so they'd know to expect a delay. It shouldn't cause too much of a problem. I can make up a little time between stops.
The engineer seemed to be none the worse for his perilous experience earlier.
Glad to see you're up and around, Cleve.
Mister, you damn near shot me.
But I didn't. When you get right down to cases, that's all that really counts, isn't it?
Maybe. But what if I'd moved my head a little just as you pulled the trigger?
Well, that would have been a shame. I was counting on you being too scared to move.
The engineer glared, but didn't make any reply to that.
Oh, I've got steam up. Let's get the hell out of here.
About 5 miles east of the town where the shootout had taken place, there was a grade that, while not too steep, was long enough to cause the train to slow down a little. At the top of that grade, Frank Morgan tossed the carpet bag he had purchased in Denver from the rear platform of the caboose and then swung down to the ground himself, running a few steps before he caught his balance and stopped. As the train chugged on eastward, receding into the distance, Frank picked up his carpet bag and walked in the same direction. Only a couple of 100 yards ahead was a line of cottonwood trees that marked the course of a creek. That was his destination. Moving under the trees, Frank found a log where he could sit down and wait with his carpet bag at his feet. The shade was welcome. The sun had risen high enough by now that the day was beginning to heat up. Frank had been waiting only about half an hour when he heard the hoofbeats of several horses approaching. He stood up and turned toward the south. Out of habit, his hand hovered near the butt of the gun on his hip. After a moment, he relaxed as he recognized the man riding toward the creek and leading two horses behind him.
Easy, Morgan. It's Marshal Larch.
Thanks for doing this, Marshal.
The marshal swung down from the saddle and handed the reins of the two riderless horses to Frank.
I'm damned if I know why I'm doing this, Morgan. I ought to arrest you considering the errand you're on. but I'm old enough to remember a time when the only law west of the Mississippi was what a man packed on his hip. Those were worse times in a lot of ways, but by God, I'm not convinced that justice wasn't better served back then, too.
That's one of the burdens of getting older, Marshal. You see too many changes, good and bad. Well, you seem to know your horses, Marshal. These are fine-looking animals.
I've been around some, Morgan. The chestnut will make a great pack horse. I picked up all the supplies you asked for and loaded them up for you.
I appreciate it, Marshal.
The real prize is the rangy one.
He's got a real mean look in his eye, doesn't he?
Yes, sir. That's why I put the saddle on him. He'll run hard when you ask him.
Frank transferred the contents of his carpet bag to the saddle bags on the dun, then handed the empty carpet bag to Larch.
If you know anybody who can make good use of that, they're welcome to it.
Hell, it's nearly brand new.
I'm used to traveling light.
And money don't mean a whole lot to you, does it? With what you gave me back in town, I was able to pay the livery owner a good price for these horses.
Anybody who claims money doesn't matter has never been without it. I know what it's like to be poor. I have been plenty of times in my life. But I also know that money's real value is what it can accomplish. I'd spend every penny I have if it helped me settle the score with Dutton.
Just take the horses, and don't remind me that you're on your way to kill a man.
Frank nodded. He put his foot in the stirrup and swung up into the dun's saddle. Then he reached down and held out his hand to Larch. The marshal hesitated for a second, but then took it in a firm grip.
I don't know whether to wish you luck or not, but I reckon I hope you don't get yourself killed, Morgan.
I'll settle for that. So long, Marshal.
Vaya con Dios.
Frank had cut north from the railroad, heading for the low, rolling mounds of the Smoky Hills. He wasn't quite sure just how a fellow would go about riding a horse all the way to Boston, but he supposed that if he kept heading in the right general direction, he would get there sooner or later. By nightfall, he was a long way from where he had left the train, and he wondered if Dutton had found out by now what had happened. In these days of telegraphic communication, news could travel hundreds of miles, even thousands, in no time at all. It was even possible that Dutton had an agent on the same train as Frank, keeping an eye on him. Frank found a good place to camp among the hills, next to a small stream. He unsaddled the dun and took the supplies off the chestnut and hobbled both horses.
Riders. A lot of them. They're coming fast.
There had been a time when a man wouldn't want to travel alone out here, and if he did, he sure wouldn't build a fire at night. Frank knew, though, that all the Indians were on reservations now, and the odds of it being a war party galloping toward him ranged from pretty slim to almost none. Frank stood up and kicked dirt over the flames of the campfire, quickly extinguishing them. He didn't want to announce his presence here until he had a better idea what was going on. Frank suddenly missed Stormy and Wolf. He was used to talking these things over with them. Now, he was truly on his own. Waiting in the shadows next to a clump of brush, Frank stood motionless as about a dozen riders came up to the creek and stopped about 20 yards downstream from him.
All right, we'll let the horses drink for a minute.
It was dark enough so that Frank couldn't see the men very well. They all wore broad-brimmed hats, but there was something odd about the shape of the heads under those hats. They looked lumpy somehow, like they weren't even human. Frank felt a chill go through him. But then one of the men reached up, took off his hat, and pulled something else off his head. He dragged the sleeve of his shirt across his forehead, wiping away sweat.
Put that back on.
Sorry, boss.
It made sense now to Frank. The riders were masked. They wore some sort of hoods, probably made out of flour sacks with eye holes cut in them, or something like that. Their hats were crammed down on top of the hoods. In Frank's experience, men who went around with masks covering their faces seldom did it because they were up to anything good. They were usually bent on mischief and didn't want anybody to recognize them. The dun and the chestnut stirred uneasily.
Easy, easy.
Frank knew they wanted to call out to the other horses, so he tightly grabbed their noses.
How much farther you reckon it is, boss?
Not far. Remember, we don't plan on killing anything except livestock. But if you have to shoot to kill to protect yourself, that's all right. And if some of those sodbusters happen to get in the way of stray bullets, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Frank's jaw tightened with anger as he heard those callous words. These masked men were on a mission of murder, and he might well be the only one besides them who knew about it.
You know,
I thought I caught a glimpse of light up here as we were riding toward the creek, boss. You think there could be somebody around?
Anything is possible, but I didn't see a light.
Well, it went out right quick. Do you want some of us to take a look up and down the creek, just to make sure there ain't nobody lurking around?
No, you do it, Bonner. I can't spare anyone else. And you'd better catch up with us before we get there.
Sure, boss. I was probably wrong anyway.
Just on the chance that you actually did see something, I want you to check it out. We don't need trouble coming up behind us tonight. The rest of you, let's go.
The horses splashed across the creek, except for Bonner's. Bonner turned his mount and rode slowly along the creek bank toward the spot where Frank stood. Even though whatever was going to happen tonight was none of his business, Frank wasn't the sort of man who could stand by and let innocent people suffer if he could do anything about it. His mind was racing, and he had already come up with the beginnings of a plan. He stood stock still and waited for the masked gunman to come to him. Bonner wasn't taking any chances. His Colt was in his hand and ready to fire at an instant's notice. That was going to make things trickier for Frank. He would have to move as fast as he possibly could. Frank lunged at the gunman. Bonner came out of the saddle and fell to the ground hard. Frank kept his grip on the man's gun. Frank gave the weapon a hard wrench and heard the snap as Bonner's finger, trapped in the trigger guard, broke under the strain. Frank dropped on top of the man and drove his right fist to Bonner's jaw in a sledgehammer blow. Frank pulled the gun out of nerveless fingers and stood up. Frank pulled Bonner's belt out of the loops on the man's trousers, rolled Bonner onto his stomach, and used the belt to tie his hands behind his back. Bonner would probably be able to work himself loose, but it would take him a good long while. Bonner was wearing a long duster. Frank had a similar one rolled up in his gear. He broke it out, unrolled it, and put it on. Then Frank pulled the hood off Bonner's head. He had guessed right. The thing was made from a small flour sack. It even still smelled a little like flour as Frank put it on. His own hat was the same sort that Bonner wore, so he settled it on top of the hood rather than using the gunman's hat.
That ought to do it.
Satisfied that he could pass for Bonner in the dark, Frank took the reins of the man's horse and swung up into the saddle. Sodbusters. That was the word the leader had used. From the sound of what Frank had overheard, somebody was trying to bring back the bad old days in these parts. Range wars between cattlemen and farmers could get very ugly, and usually they claimed innocent victims. Once Frank was sure what the situation was, he would do what he could to stop it before that happened here. Frank rode across the creek and then urged the animal into a faster pace. He wanted to catch up to the hooded men before they reached their destination and started making trouble for somebody. It wasn't long before Frank came in sight of the other riders. At first, they were just a dark mass moving over the rolling hills, but soon he was close enough to make out the individual figures. They were bunched up, which was a shame. If they had been spread out, he might have been able to come up to one or two of them and fool them into thinking he was Bonner until he was close enough to bend a gun barrel over their heads. It didn't look like that was going to be an option, though. One of them must have noticed him and told the others, because they all reined in and paused a moment to wait for him.
Did you find anything, Bonner?
Frank was trusting to the hood to muffle his voice and disguise it.
Nothing.
I didn't think so. Come on.
The leader urged his horse into motion again, and the others, now including the drifter, fell in with him. A few minutes later, they came in sight of a scattering of lights. As they rode closer, those pinpoints of illumination became the warm yellow glow of lamplight through windows. They were approaching some sort of community. Maybe a group of farmers who had all settled together. The hooded riders paused again at the top of a small rise. Frank estimated that there were at least a dozen houses spread out before them, along with barns, smokehouses, storage buildings, and the like. Beyond the little settlement, carefully cultivated fields stretched for as far as the eye could see. Frank spotted a couple of grain silos in the distance. A lot of hard work had gone into this community. Hard work that these hooded riders seemed intent on wrecking.
Remember what I told you. Let's go.
The leader heeled his horse into a gallop and started down the gentle slope. The rest of the gunmen were right behind him. Frank came last, trying to hang back without being too conspicuous about it. His left hand held the dun's reins, while his right drew the peacemaker from its holster. The other men had drawn their guns, too. The sound of the galloping horses must have been heard because a door was thrown open in one of the houses and a couple of men ran outside. Frank thought they were carrying rifles.
Who's there? Damn it, who are you?
The only answer was a sudden spurt of gunfire from several of the hooded riders, including the leader. The two men scrambled for the safety of the house, but one of them suddenly dropped his rifle, grabbed at his leg, and tumbled off his feet. The hooded riders veered their horses toward him. The man who had been with the wounded man ran back out, got hold of him under the arms, and hurriedly dragged him into the house. Frank edged his horse up next to the closest of the hooded men. He reversed the Colt in his hand and struck out with it, smashing the butt of the gun into the man's head. The man pitched out of the saddle and landed hard on the ground, rolling over a couple of times before coming to a stop. None of the other hooded riders noticed what Frank had done. Frank was able to move up next to another one and strike again. And again, one of the raiders tumbled senselessly out of the saddle. This one, however, didn't pass unnoticed.
Bonner! What the hell?
Then, as Frank came closer...
You ain't Bonner!
The hooded rider tried to jerk his pistol into line for a shot. Frank didn't give him the chance. That was 3 of the 11 accounted for. But that still left 8 gunmen who were starting to get the idea that something was wrong.
That's not Bonner! Get him! Shoot the son of a bitch!
Mounted killers ran toward Frank, flames spouting from the muzzles of the guns in their hands. The hooded riders might not have intended to kill any of the farmers whose community they were raiding, but when it came to the mysterious stranger in their midst, all bets were off.
Okay, boys, you called the tune, and you're damn well gonna dance to it.
Come on!
Frank drove his heels into his horse's flanks and sent the animal leaping forward, not only meeting the gunman's charge, but smashing right into the middle of them.
Where the hell is he?
Suddenly, in the darkness, Frank was indistinguishable from the other hooded men all around him, and they had to hold their fire because they didn't know who was who. That unexpected maneuver was effective for the moment, but it had its drawbacks too.
The damn farmers are firing on us!
Frank leaned forward over the horse's neck, making himself a smaller target, and burst out from the clump of raiders. Twisting in the saddle, he threw a couple of shots at them. The peacemaker was empty, so Frank jammed it back into its holster and then reached up to take off his hat and rip the hood from his head. He whirled the horse and rode around one of the settlers' houses. In a matter of moments, he had struck a significant blow at the crew of gunmen. Half of them were either unconscious or wounded, and the people who lived here were putting up a good fight and peppering the remaining raiders with hot lead.
Let's get out of here!
The order to retreat didn't slow down 2 of the hooded gunmen who were giving chase to Frank. Shots blasted after him, searching for him in the darkness. He sent his horse darting around the corner of a barn in the brief moment when he was out of sight of his pursuers. Frank pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot and dropped off the back of the horse. He pressed himself against the wall of the barn, holding the Winchester slanted across his chest. The two raiders thundered around the corner. Frank stepped out and swung the rifle, gripping it by the barrel. The stock slammed into one of the riders and swept him backward, right out of the saddle. Frank turned the Winchester around, held it normally, and snapped it up to his shoulder as the other gunman wheeled his horse. The gunman slewed sideways under the impact of the bullet and then fell off his horse. Frank spun around in time to see the other man, the one he'd knocked off the horse, take off in a dead run. Frank fired at the fleeing man, aiming low in an attempt to knock a leg out from under him and bring him down without killing him. The man didn't slow down, so Frank knew his shot had missed. The raider vanished into the darkness.
Don't move, you bastard! Drop that rifle or we'll blow you apart!
Frank didn't drop the Winchester, but he lifted both hands to shoulder level so that the men could see that he meant no harm.
Take it easy. Case you haven't noticed, I'm not wearing a hood. I'm not one of the bunch that rode in yelling and shooting.
You were with them. You had to be.
That's because I knocked one of them out, stole his hood, and took his place until I could find out what they're gonna do. I heard them talking when they came by my camp, and I knew they were up to no good.
No good? All they want to do is run us off our own land, and if they can't do that, they'll kill us all. I'd say that was being up to no good.
So would I. That's why I wanted to stop them. Were any of your people badly hurt?
Roy Wilson got a bullet through the leg. Reckon he's the only one who was wounded. He shot a couple milk cows, too.
But I expect they would have done a lot worse if they'd gotten the chance. You can put your hands down, mister.
What is this place?
We call it Elysium.
It's from mythology, and it means a place of perfect happiness.
The Elysian Fields were the abode of the dead.
Frank had read the classics too, surprising some of the farmers.
Some folks might not want to name a settlement after a place like that.
Yes, well, this isn't the time or place to argue such things. Come with us.
They stepped back to let Frank go in front of them. He noticed that although they had lowered their shotguns slightly, they kept the greeners pointed in his general direction. He walked back to the large open area in the center of the settlement. The houses were scattered around it, so that it formed a sort of public square. Lamps burned brightly in all the houses now, and several men in the large group that had gathered in the square held lanterns.
Who's that? Did you catch one of the miscreants, Horace?
He claims he's not one of them. Says he pretended to be so that he could try to stop them from harming us.
A likely story. He's just trying to save his own hide.
I'm not so sure about that. I was watching, and I saw one of them who seemed to turn suddenly on the others. He shot at them and then rode off with a couple of them chasing him. That must have been this fella.
Yeah, that was me. Like I told you, I was trying to stop him.
Well, it looked like he did for four or five of them. I think he must be telling the truth, Horace.
We'll reserve judgment on that. Who are you, mister?
Not for the first time in his life, Frank thought about giving a less than honest answer to that question. His reputation was widespread, and it often caused him more problems than it did benefits. But lying went against the grain.
My name is Frank Morgan.
Morgan the gunfighter?
Ah, yeah, it is him. I've seen his picture in the Illustrated Weekly and the Police Gazette.
Harsh, please. Is this true?
Which part? The fact that some call me a gunfighter, or the business about having my picture in those magazines?
You know damned well which one I meant, Mr. Morgan.
You seem to have made up your own mind, so there's not really any point in me answering, is there?
Yeah, he's the gunslinger, all right. You'd better be careful, Horace. You don't want to rile him.
For God's sake, Frank thought. What was wrong with these people? He had risked his life to help them, and now they were suddenly looking at him as if he were some sort of rabid beast that had wandered into their community.
Look, I don't mean you folks any harm. Like I told you, I just happened to hear those men talking, and when I saw they were wearing masks, I knew they were going to cause trouble for somebody. I've seen their sort before.
So have we. They're hired guns. They work for a man named Carter. Their boss is called Parmalee.
Parmalee? I know that name. But I can't place it.
He's a paid murderer!
Wait, you know who they are and why they attacked you?
Of course we know. We're not fools. This isn't the first time they've raided us. But they wear those masks, so it wouldn't do us any good to call in the law. We couldn't identify them positively or testify against them in court.
Say, Carter hired Parmalee and his killers. Maybe we could hire Morgan here to fight back against them.
No matter what you heard about me, my gun's not for hire.
You've gotten mixed up in plenty of shooting wars before. Unless everything we've heard about you is a lie.
I've seen my share of trouble. But any ruckus that I took part in was because friends of mine were in trouble. Or because one side was clearly in the right.
We're in trouble.
And we're in the right. We just want to be left alone to live our lives and raise our crops and our families.
We don't have a whole lot of money, but we could pool all our resources and afford to pay you something.
Forget it.
Frank had long overdue business with Charles Dutton.
I'm sorry you folks are in trouble, but I have business of my own to attend to. I'm just passing through these parts.
You heard what the man said. Look, Mr. Morgan, we appreciate what you did for us tonight, but this is our problem, not yours. And if you want to just move along, don't let us keep you.
Frank wondered for a second if Horace was trying to trick him into offering his help. But he decided that the man was too genuine and plain-spoken to do that. Horace was the sort of man who said what he meant and meant what he said.
Did all of them get away?
Yeah. The fellows who weren't hit picked up the ones who were and carried them off.
Well, I know where I left the man I knocked out and whose place I took. I'll go get him. You can turn him over to the law. Maybe he'll talk and implicate the others.
That could help us, all right. If one of their own men testified against Parmalee and Carter, the authorities wouldn't have any choice but to do something about them.
Just let me find my horse.
Some of us will go with you.
That won't be necessary.
Maybe not, but Parmalee and his men could still be out there somewhere. If you were to run into them, it could go badly for you.
I'll get saddled up.
The rest of you men stay here and be alert for trouble. I don't think Parmalee and his bunch will come back tonight, but you never can tell about renegades like that.
All right, let's get moving. The longer we wait, the more chance that hombre has of getting away.
Even at night, Frank had a frontiersman's knack of being able to follow a trail once he had been over it, so it wasn't hard to return to his campsite. The farmers were keeping up very well, considering their mounts were all plodding, shaggy farm animals.
We weren't properly introduced back there. I'm Horace Duncan, and I know who you are, of course.
Pleased to meet you, Horace, even under the circumstances.
Frank paused, unsure whether to say what he was thinking, but curiosity and his own plain-spoken nature compelled him to go on.
You strike me as a well-educated man. Most of the others do, too.
For a bunch of farmers, you mean. You don't have to be ignorant to till the soil, you know.
Frank had touched a nerve.
As a matter of fact, I used to teach botany and horticulture at one of the universities back east. Most of us have at least some college education. Before we came out here, we all decided to settle together and apply scientific methods to our farming. There's a fellow out in California named Burbank, who's had quite a bit of success crossbreeding various strains of plants to improve the crops, and we're trying to follow his example.
Yeah, I can tell you used to be a professor. Warm up real nice to your subject, don't you?
You asked.
Yeah, I reckon I did. You know, I think I heard of Parmalee. He's just a hired gun, maybe a little worse than some. But who's this fella Carter who's got it in for you? I didn't think there were any cattle barons left in this part of the country. All the big ranches are farther west.
Carter's not a rancher. Why would you think that?
Who else would want to run a bunch of farmers off their land?
Thaddeus Carter works for the railroad. He's a businessman. He hates us because we formed a grange with some of the other farmers in the area, and we've been trying to persuade the state legislature to regulate freight rates on the rail lines. They're so high that no matter how efficiently we produce our crops, we can't make a decent living because we have to pay so much to ship them to market.
Wait a minute. You mean this fella Carter hired a bunch of hooded night riders because of a business dispute?
It may not be the sort of trouble you're used to, but I assure you it's serious to us. Deadly serious. You could see that for yourself tonight.
Yeah, I reckon.
If Frank had needed any more evidence that the West was changing, surely this was it. People had started shooting at each other over freight rates and political arguments. More than ever, Frank felt like a relic of a vanished time. Frank and the other men had reached the creek where he'd made camp earlier.
Well, he's gone. I tied him up, but it looks like he worked himself loose quicker than I thought he would.
Damn it! This was finally our chance to get something we could use against Parmalee and Carter.
Frank lifted his head suddenly and held up a hand for silence. He had heard something, a faint rustling in the brush along the creek.
Get down! Anybody hit back there?
No, we're all right. What about you, Mr. Morgan?
I'm fine.
Frank kept his gun trained on the dark clump of brush as he advanced slowly toward it.
Be careful. The man could be trying to trick you.
Could be. I don't think so.
Using his left hand, he dug in his shirt pocket and found a match. Frank snapped it to life with his thumbnail as he reached the brush. The harsh glare from the match showed him a man lying in the undergrowth. Frank recognized Bonner's duster. Now there was bright red blood splashed on the long coat.
Oh, for God's sake, mister. You already broke my finger, and now you shot me.
Frank pushed some of the brush aside, reached in with a foot, and kicked the gun that Bonner had dropped well out of the man's reach.
Couple of you boys come here and drag him out. His fangs have been pulled. Prop him up against that cottonwood.
Frank struck another match, and while Horace and the others covered Bonner, just in case the gunman tried something, Frank examined his wound. The bullet had dug a deep gash in Bonner's side, but it hadn't lodged in his body.
You'll be all right once that's patched up.
You gonna take me to a doctor?
Someplace better. You're going to Elysium.
If I'd just been able to get loose quicker, I'd have been long gone before you bastards got back.
Yeah, well, if you hadn't been such a ruthless, greedy son of a bitch to start with, you wouldn't be in this fix either. Nobody made you sign on with Parmalee and Carter to terrorize a bunch of innocent folks.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I never terrorized nobody.
Not tonight, maybe.
You're the one who jumped me, mister. I was riding along peacefully when you attacked me.
Just riding along peacefully with a hood over your head.
What hood? I don't see no hood.
I tell you, I don't know what you're talking about. And that's what I'll tell the law, too.
Bonner was a hired gunman, Frank thought, but he wasn't a complete fool. He had already figured out what Frank had in mind, and he was serving notice now that he wasn't going to testify against the men who'd been riding with him earlier. Frank figured they would just have to see about that.
My wife Mildred will tend to your injuries.
I want a doctor! A real sawbones! I want somebody to fetch the sheriff, too!
You're in no position to be making demands, mister, and we're in no mood to be listening to them either!
Better pay attention, Bonner. I don't think these folks are in a very forgiving mood right now.
Horace's wife walked into the room with a rifle tucked under her arm and a resolute expression on her face. She was an attractive woman in her 40s, with graying blonde hair.
Is this one of them?
That's right.
Do you want me to shoot him?
Bonner blanched a little more at the hard-bitten, matter-of-fact question.
No, Mildred. I want you to clean and bandage that bullet wound in his side. He's got a broken finger, too, that I suppose could use splinting.
I'd rather shoot him. But I suppose I'll do as you say, Horace.
She turned to look at Frank, who was smiling at the woman's outspokenness.
And just who are you, mister?
Frank Morgan, ma'am.
Mr. Morgan's the man who helped us fight off Parmalee's bunch earlier.
Mildred's expression softened slightly.
Well, in that case, thank you, Mr. Morgan, and welcome to our home.
Thank you, ma'am.
Asa, you and Caleb take that man into the spare bedroom and put him on the bed. Take my comforter off of there first, though. I don't want blood getting all over it. I'll gather what I need and be in there in a minute to tend to him.
Keep a close eye on him, too. He might still try to get away.
While his wife was taking care of the prisoner's wounds and the other men went back to their homes, Horace took Frank into the combination kitchen and dining room and offered him a seat at the table.
All I can offer you in the way of a drink is cider.
Cider'll be just fine. Not that much of a drinking man, anyway.
Neither am I. But I have to admit there are times, and tonight is one of them, when a shot of whiskey wouldn't be so bad. We really do owe you a debt of thanks, Mr. Morgan. We might have been able to fight off Parmalee and his men without your help, but they would have done a lot more damage and perhaps injured more people before we could drive them off. We weren't expecting to be hit from behind like that.
The element of surprise always comes in handy. And call me Frank.
Frank felt an instinctive liking for this big, raw-boned professor turned farmer. The two men sipped their cider in silence for a moment.
I won't insult you by offering again to hire you to help us, Frank. But I don't mind telling you. Fighting hired gunmen isn't something that any of us here in Elysium are well equipped to do. We're all peaceable men.
And that's something that nobody's ever accused me of being.
I mean, no offense, Frank.
None taken. I mean, there's no point in denying the obvious. Dealing with men like Parmalee is a lot more my line than it is yours. Unfortunately, like I told you before, I'm just passing through. I have business elsewhere.
He thought about how it had felt to hold his beloved Vivian's bullet-shattered body in his arms.
Pressing business.
I understand. Now that we have that man to testify against Parmalee and Carter, the law's bound to help us.
He's likely to be stubborn about turning against his boss's horse. And even if Bonner testifies, I'm not sure just how much the law will help you.
According to what Horace had told him, Carter worked for the railroad, and that made him an important man. The railroads controlled a lot of money and wielded a lot of power from one end of the country to the other. The authorities had been known to turn a blind eye to the transgressions of the rich and powerful. Horace Duncan was smart enough to know that, but the man was desperate, eager to clutch at any hope. Frank sensed that it had been Horace's idea to bring all the others out here and start this farming community. Horace probably felt like it was his duty to protect them.
I'll tell you what, Horace. I might be able to stay around for a while and lend you a hand.
Really?
Frank thought again about Dutton. Vengeance had waited this long, he told himself. Maybe it could wait a little while longer.
Really?